Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Dr. Jonathan Woodson, Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs within the U.S. Department of Defense. So, you know, in the last few years, you have pursued a multi-year plan for the modernization of military medicine in the service. As your tenure ends at DOD, what were your key priorities, say, over the last couple of years, and how did they relate to the six strategic lines of effort that you had been pursuing and ultimately fulfill MHS's quadruple aim?
Absolutely. That's great. So the first line of effort, again, was to modernize the MHS management with an enterprise focus for all the reasons I spoke about before. And there were several actions. There were many actions, but several that were important. So it was about establishing the Defense Health Agency to create economies of scale and efficiency. But it was also about ensuring that we had a strategy for delivering care in what we called our multi-service markets, which would allow us to optimize the use of the military treatment facilities as service points, but also optimize what we would pay for in the purchase care market when it wasn't available in the military treatment facilities. And this required a whole reorganization to integrate the services and the administrative process. But it was also about developing a common cost accounting system so that we could follow where the money went more easily and made sure that we were spending every dollar on what were priority issues, and we weren't losing any money to inefficiency. It was about new leader development. So leaders in the 21st century need new capabilities. When I talk on this subject, I talk about the fact that leaders in the 21st century need to have skills to operate in this volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous world. It's an acronym called VUCA we learned when we were back at the War College. Leaders really need to learn how to build teams to craft solutions to complex problems. It was about acquiring new business tools that would allow our providers and our folks in the MHS to do a better job. So we've just invested in a new electronic health record that will advance our ability to deliver care. So it was about enterprise management. The second, of course, was about defining the 21st century medical capabilities that were necessary. We talked about four decades ago, a million-man army. We talked about the fact that nowadays we're talking about a lot of disaggregated operations. The capabilities that are required today and going forward into the future will be vastly different than we needed four decades ago. Remember this, that the American people and the American leadership expect us to deliver the standard of care or above the standard of care anywhere in the world. Servicemen and women go in harm's way. And as a result, we've got to meet that need and meet it with agility, flexibility, and economy and scalability. So the third was about creating a new strategy for the force management. So today, we have many more subspecialists. We have many more critical specialties. And so you need to develop a human capital program that allows you to assess, retain, recruit, and maintain a broad array of specialties. And that no longer can be done in isolation within, I think, the independent services in a way that it was done years ago when a doc was a doc and a nurse was a nurse. We needed to look at the balance of the active component and the reserve component. The fourth line of effort was about defining and expanding and investing in our strategic partners. So as good as the military health system is, we can't do it all. And so we need to have partnerships with academic health centers, with the Veterans Administration, with industry, with other research and development concerns. And so it was about defining those strategic partnerships, very important to make us strong as we went forward in the future. The fifth was about reforming TRICARE. So TRICARE actually is a very robust program, a defined health benefit, as I said before, but it needed to be modernized in its administrative process to make it better for the beneficiaries so that they felt good about it, clearly. And then the last was about defining our requirements and competencies in global health engagement, which, again, as I said, is a new instrument of national power. So how could we organize to ensure that we could serve the secretary's needs and the chairman's needs better to use this tool as a real prominent part of their toolkit as they developed the national military, national defense strategy, and advised the president as to what we were capable of. And again, Ebola is one of those issues. Again, capacity building, health engagement. And I would remind you that in today's world, there are other countries who are investing heavily in this. So China is raising their hand and sending medical support to various areas. Cuba has been doing that for a while. And we need to be thinking about how we leverage our military health system in coordination with other U.S. government agencies to effectively utilize this instrument of soft power for good around the world.
I want to drill down a little bit into your pursuit of the enterprise management approach. And I kind of had a question. You've already kind of given me a sense of what it is. And what prompted your pursuit of it was some factors around just the budget realities of the world. But where I want to go with this is, what is an enterprise management approach? And how is the Defense Health Agency that you established, that you helped create, how is that a manifestation of that approach in action?
Well, you know, I always say never let a good crisis go unutilized. So in 2008, 2009, when I first encountered Secretary Gates, he was very concerned about the escalating cost of the military health system. And you may remember there was a famous quote that it was eating our lunch, basically. Mm-hmm. And that reflected the issue of this growing cost of the military health system, again, a must-pay bill against the top-line cap of the Department of Defense, and this tension that was being created against this must-pay bill for the military health system and eating up resources, train, man, equip, and modernize the rest of the force. So it was a real challenge. And at that time, of course, healthcare inflation was skyrocketing. We were assessing on active duty more troops, which meant more beneficiaries. And so there were many factors that were feeding into the rising costs. And as a result, we had $54-plus billions of dollars that were being invested in the military health system. But as I came into this job, I looked around and I said, well, costs are one thing, but we also need to look at outcomes. We need to understand that we need to organize to effect to ensure that we remain the best health system in the world, bar none, that our outcomes are great. And so, barring on experience from the civilian sector, I knew that we needed to reorganize so that we decrease variability around the health system, that we were all operating from the highest standards and platforms and service delivery strategies. And so this is where you get into the Defense Health Agency, which is a joint agency that, in fact, establishes those standards, acquires the business tools, allows us to create performance improvement dashboards that senior leaders can monitor, which can drill down to the individual military treatment facility so that we have a common sight picture. We know where to put resources. We know where there are problems, and we can correct those problems. So this is enterprise management. And this is just one piece of it. Again, when you get into, let's say, things like health IT, health information technology, which has been very costly, not only for us, but every health center. They've been pouring billions of dollars in it. The real issue is, how do you create economies of scale, but actually get the most out of that investment that you can possibly get in terms of improving healthcare strategy, healthcare delivery, and healthcare outcomes. And so you just can go on down the line: facilities, contracts, pharmacy. There are just many things that we're crying for an enterprise approach to management to improve outcomes and economies of scale.
So, like, when you think of the success of DHA, you know, and maybe perhaps you've alluded to them, but maybe you might want to identify some of the things, since it's been fully operational since, I think, 2015, if there's anything that you want to highlight about some of its successes. But also, you know, just as you think back, is there anything that could have been done differently, that maybe you would have done differently in establishing it?
So, you know, there's always things you might have wanted to do differently. The Defense Health Agency is, it should be noted, is a work in progress. So it reached full operating capability on 1 October 2015. And so it's about 2.5 years old in terms of its existence. And there still are a lot of things we need to do to create even a more agile and efficient system. So one of the things, of course, is that if you look at the 10 shared services that originally came in, like health IT and pharmacy and facilities, contracts, et cetera, is that we were, in fact, taking on these functions from all of the military services. And as a result, we had duplications in personnel. And so we need to attrit that down to a more efficient manpower state manning document. So it's a work in progress, and I see a great future for the Defense Health Agency in support of the services to allow them to do even a greater job in the future.
Yeah, so I actually, it's a great segue into your efforts to ensure the future needs. That's what I wanted to get at, and capabilities of the MHS enterprise. You pursued a review, I believe, of what is going to be needed in the future in terms of resources and personnel and skills. What insights have been drawn from that review, and how have those insights been put into practice?
So, again, as we pivot to the future, what we're recognizing again is that we need greater capability at the point of injury. We need to invest in lightweight technology. We need to invest in interoperability of personnel and equipment. So, again, historically, when organized by Army, Navy, Air Force, you get different designs, you get different acquisition of equipment, and then suddenly you get a situation like we've had in Afghanistan. And certainly as we're seeing today, where you need to put teams together quickly from the three services and you don't have quite the matchup. What we've got to do going forward is ensure that we've got interoperability of the services, common training platforms, common equipment acquisition, common understanding of how to operate in the operational environment with agility and flexibility so that we can put the teams together wherever they might be needed to serve the defense of this nation. So that's where we're going as we move forward. And this does not necessarily take away what is unique to the services. So I always say about 85 to 90% of what the services do is alike. As a surgeon, the outcome I want from the bypass I do, the resources brought to doing that bypass, the standards brought to that doing that bypass should be the same no matter whether I'm wearing an Army uniform, a Navy uniform, or an Air Force uniform. And I use that as a simple example to say that across medical care, there is a lot that is alike. But there are some things that the services need to hold on to that are unique, and we don't want to destroy what they do very, very well, such as undersea medicine for the Navy, aerial platforms for the Air Force, and some land-based projection of medical force for the Army. We want them to begin to continue to innovate in those specialty areas, but at the same time, we need to work from this platform of jointness and interoperability so that we're flexible, efficient, scalable, and we can operate anywhere around the world, whether it's in a fixed facility or it's in an operational environment like a forward surgical team or a Role 3 hospital in theater.
So I was wondering, what programs have you established or that are in place to ensure the clinical skills of folks in the military medicine are actually maximized?
Again, great question. So in American medicine writ large, we've been challenged with this concept of maintenance of competency as we've had the ingrowth of subspecialization. And in fact, if you take a specialty like general surgery, where in fact there's been more minimally invasive surgery, one of the issues we've had to deal with is the erosion of some broad surgical skills that are required when we go into combat. So how to do open surgery, how to do that damage control surgery, stop that bleeding. Because in conventional training now, it's so highly specialized, minimally invasive, and compartmentalized that many of the trainees are coming coming out with fewer broad skills. What we've done is actually undertake an analysis of this so that we can identify what the gap is. And so now that we understand what the gaps are, we can develop a disciplined curriculum and training strategy to close that gap. So, for example, investment in sophisticated simulation platforms to create skills and maintain skills is really an important part of our program. But in addition, understanding again to get back to that fourth strategic line of effort, which is partnerships, it is about establishing and containing and maintaining relationships with like the Ryder Institute in Florida, where we can send teams, trauma teams, to get real world experience periodically to maintain their competency or pre-deployment training. It is about partnering with the American College of Surgeons to develop standards around skill development and curriculum to enhance skills, maintain skills of surgeons. It is about partnering with the Institute for Healthcare Improvement to get and design important healthcare delivery systems to drive better outcomes. So it requires, from the analysis, it has required us to develop different strategies that complement and work with those six strategic lines of effort.
So you have mentioned, Dr. Woodson, the new electronic health record, and it's probably one of the most important advances to be introduced in MHS in 2016. And I believe it's called MHS Genesis, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Would you tell us more about this effort, and perhaps you could highlight the roadmap going forward?
Great question. And again, it needs to be taken in context. So electronic health records have been expanding in American medicine for some time, really with the Affordable Care Act and the pumping of money into the American market to incentivize the use of electronic health records. We've seen a marked expansion of digital platforms for archiving and for sharing information. The one issue with electronic health records until very recently has been its interoperability, meaning the ability to actually share that digital information for the purpose of care, coordinating care with many entities. The electronic health records to date had been highly compartmentalized and highly customized to a single hospital or group practice, and the ability to share that digital information has been relatively small. With our strategy for acquiring the electronic health record, we actually set out to push the envelope on interoperability to ensure that we could share information with health information exchanges because, in fact, 70% of our dollars, particularly if you look at the TRICARE program, is spent in the purchase care sector, the economy, basically. And we needed to be able to get information back on our beneficiaries to ensure that we were they were healthy and they were getting the right care and they were getting quality care and we could clearly define the health of the force. So our acquisition, MHS Genesis, really pushes the envelope on interoperability. But more importantly, it is a sophisticated clinical and business tool that can aggregate information in various databases to give the provider on one end the information they need at the point of service, at the point of care, to enhance their ability to deliver care and therefore their ability to drive outcomes. As well as on the other end, it allows us to aggregate information to better understand how we need to adjust systems to drive population health or explore new avenues for serving different cohorts of patients with specialized issues. It allows us to coordinate better across the continuum and the transition of care as well. So we're looking for the rollout of this electronic health record to really advance our strategy for care and, of course, putting us, again, keeping us as one of the top healthcare delivery systems in the world.
What is DoD doing to strengthen military medicine's global health engagement? I will explore this question and much more with Dr. Jonathan Woodson, Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.